Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What a beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on WWL. I want to take the beginning of this hour to understand the law a little bit better on when it comes to public officials and what you can and cannot say and how critical you can and cannot be of an elected official. And does the law change when it comes to their wife or their husband or their children? To help us understand that, we've invited Lariska Lidsky to join us, a professor of media and First Amendment law, and author of a number of books and articles on defamation law. Professor Lidsky, thanks for joining us here on WWL.
Happy to be here.
I remember vaguely my very first journalism law class at the University of Missouri and being taught about the difference between someone who thrusts themselves into the public eye versus someone who does not, and that the law treats them differently when it comes to their defense of people allegedly defaming them or speaking badly about them. When it comes to someone who chooses to run for public office and someone who is elected to public office and becomes a public official, the law does see them differently when it comes to what you can say about them, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it certainly does.
What is, kind of explain to us what the difference is.
Okay. So the law basically says if you are going to run for public office or if you're going to thrust yourself into the public eye in some regard, that you need to have a pretty thick skin because we need to have a lot of leeway to comment about what you're doing, criticize you. And so the law says that if you're going to sue for defamation, meaning somebody made a false statement that you're claiming is injurious to your reputation, then you need to show that they were more than negligent in making that statement, that they either knowingly disregarded that the statement was untrue or recklessly disregarded that the statement was untrue. And we call that in law actual malice. So they have to have actual malice in order to be liable for defamation of you if they're a public official or public figure who's suing.
So libel and slander laws are different, clearly, for those individuals who choose to seek a life in the public eye than those who do not.
And yes, because we need to have a lot of leeway to comment on them. And we know that sometimes errors are inevitable, you know, in journalism and in commentary about important public events, particularly where they're, you know, they can occur, you know, in a timely fashion where you need to be able to comment in the moment. And so we give some leeway for people speaking about public officials and public figures.
And that is precedent that goes back generations, right? That goes back to the days of yellow journalism. That goes back to the days before all this technology we have now with blogging and podcasting and social media and everything else.
Yes, and it's important to know that it's really rooted in our concept of democracy, that the ultimate power is the people in a democracy, and the people need to be free to scrutinize those who influence their lives, either as public officials or influential public figures.
Has that changed at all? Has there been any new precedent? Have we seen any rulings in recent years about this extreme growth in the way people now share their opinions through blogs, through podcasts, through posts on social media, through videos, through what, however people now find a way to have a voice? Has the law changed in any way as it relates to those people doing what they do versus the rulings way back when with journalists who were printing these criticisms of public officials?
Well, Yes and no. So there definitely has been an explosion of the number of cases being brought because so many of us have a tool of mass communication in our pockets now and use it sometimes not too wisely. So there's been an explosion of cases involving all the new technologies, but the basic law still protects our ability to comment on these public officials and public figures. And unfortunately, some of the law is really tailored to the news gathering process that journalists go through. But we, you know, the courts and juries do the best they can to tailor it to how people communicate today. And but there are a lot more cases today.
Right. So the standard of actual malice, where does the truth come in when it comes to that standard? When if you allege someone has been spreading lies about you through any means, whether it's printed word or spoken word or video or whatever the case may be, and whether it's disseminated over the airwaves or the internet or text messages, where does the truth factor into that standard of proving as a public official that someone had actual malice?
Well, so it does factor in because one of the things that a public official or public figure has to prove is that the statement about them was false. They have to prove that in addition to proving actual malice. And so the trial can serve as a way to establish the falsity of what was said about them. And of course, defamation suits, libel and slander suits, are often in the public eye, you know, in the news media. The news media reports on these suits, and those kinds of accounts of defamation suits are a way to contest the truth or falsity of what is said about you.
And I know, and you probably don't have all the specifics on the local case that we've been talking about on the radio today, and I don't want you to specifically comment on that because of not knowing all the facts, and it's far from over, but does a public official's family also fall under that actual malice? The level of proof has to extend to actual malice if someone is critical of a loved one, a wife, a husband, a child of someone who's thrust themselves into the public eye?
No, not necessarily. The courts are going to look at the nature of the public official and how their family was involved in them becoming a public official. But no, not just because one member of the family is a public official or public figure doesn't make the entire family, you know, basically fair game or held to the same standards that the public official or public figure is held to. So it really you really have to look at these on a case by case basis and see to what extent was the family part of the, you know, public persona of that person.
How hard is it in layman's terms to prove actual malice? Are politicians, are elected officials, are public individuals often successful in meeting that standard and winning a libel or slander case? Or is it very difficult to do?
Well, it's hard to prove, but it's not impossible. And we've got some cases recently, you know, that show it's not impossible. There was the case against Alex Jones, who just invented facts, and that obviously was relatively easy to prove actual malice in that case. You've had some big cases in which the media settled because they were worried that the plaintiffs might be able to prove actual malice. You had Fox sued over some of the January 6th election claims about the voting machine. And so it's not impossible to prove actual malice. You can prove actual malice when somebody lied or when they stuck their head in the sand to avoid the facts. And, you know, that's reckless disregard can be, I always tell my students, it's like being an ostrich. Like the truth is out there staring you in the face, but you're hiding your head so you don't acknowledge that the truth is out there. So it's not impossible. It's just difficult.
Yeah. And I guess it all comes down to
be difficult.
And it comes down to trying to determine what's in someone's head. So if a blogger or a podcaster gets out there and if they lie or perpetuate lies about a public official, how does a jury or a judge determine concretely if that person knew they were lying or perpetuating lies, and how do you get at that in the legal process?
Well, just because a defendant says, "I didn't mean it," doesn't mean that the jury or the judge is going to believe that the defendant didn't mean it. You can infer what was in their head from circumstantial evidence. Like I say, if they're glaring, you know, signs that the information is false and they don't make the extra phone call, or they rely only on a single unreliable source of information who's known to be unreliable, you can use that circumstantial evidence to figure out that they're lying, or they're recklessly disregarding the truth to serve, you know, some ends of their own.
As we talk here locally about a case of an elected official, a sheriff, who allegedly physically assaulted a blogger who he claims for 10 years was attacking him, spreading lies about him, harassing him, and then claiming that he was then making false statements against his wife and even body shaming his wife, calling it despicable and unacceptable. Anything else about the law you want to share that you think may be interesting for our audience to know as we talk about this case locally?
Well, I think that the question is, this is clearly being fought in the court of public opinion. And it's, you know, it's interesting to know that the law in some senses is a backdrop for this to be fought in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, a lot of people are arguing about whether or not this blogger's behavior was acceptable or not. It's a story with many tentacles now. And so we're trying to explore them all and talk about them all. And I thought it important to understand what the law says and how the First Amendment figures in. The truth is, you cannot say anything and spread just vicious lies about a public official. But the standard for proving someone has been doing that is higher when it comes to a public official than someone who has not, in the eyes of the court, thrust themselves into the public eye, right?
Yes, and people should remember that you can't just say anything just because it's the internet or because it's social media, right? You can still be held accountable for speech that harms another's reputation, even if they're a public official, if you're inventing facts or recklessly disregarding the truth of what you're saying. You really can still be held responsible. It's not an all bets are off environment.
Professor, we thank you so much for joining us and helping us understand this part of the story here on WW. Anything else you want to share before we let you run?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Professor Lariska Lidsky, a media and First Amendment law professor and author of a number of books and articles on defamation law. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. What do you think? 504-260-1870. Call us, text us on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Rob, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. Hey, Rob.
I'm glad you took my call, Dave. I've been on hold for a minute, and I'm gonna make a few comments, and then I'm gonna have a question at the end. And let's just keep it 100% honest here. If this was Susan Hutson or Michelle Woodfog, they will be calling for their heads to resign as well.
And it's well, plenty of people, including Newell Norman, are calling for Sheriff Randy Smith to resign.
The professor made a good point. This is being fought out in the court of public opinion. And if anybody from St. Tammany Parish, if this case goes to trial, and anybody from St. Tammany Parish gets called on that juror, they're going to be remembering this radio station topic. If they're sitting on that jury, and they're going to have this all in the back of their mind. Well, should we give him a pass or should we not give him a pass? The law is the law. He broke the law. And he should resign. And it's obviously the man was intoxicated, heavily intoxicated. And if these threats and all of these accusations and defamation of character has been going on so long, as a man who's had a number of years in the criminal justice system, the first thing he would do is try to press charges on the individual. If that didn't work, the second thing he should do is get a restraining order on the individual. Therefore, if the sheriff was in the restaurant before Bobby Cushon, he was not able to go in there. He would have violated the restraining order. And the man may be suffering from untreated alcoholism. Whoever his attorney is, that's probably his only defense, where he can go into an inpatient treatment facility and get some help for his drinking problem, and maybe he'll beat the charge or get the charges reduced and be able to hold on to his sheriff position. But in my opinion, he shouldn't be able to hold on to it. If it was Woodfolk, Hudson, and Kirkpatrick, everybody would be calling for the heads to roll. Even all the way from Governor Landry from Baton Rouge would be getting his nose in our business down here in New Orleans. But now that it's Randy Smith, we want to give him a pass. No, man.
Well, all right. No. All right, Rob. I've let you had your say. First of all, the Attorney General has brought charges, felony charges included, against Randy Smith and had him arrested and booked. So I don't see where you can make the case that the state government is not inserting itself into this. Now, the Attorney General was invited to come in and do this investigation, but her investigator's conclusion was that Randy Smith should be charged with felony battery.
The Attorney General was brought into it after the fact. When they saw that it was possibly being swept under the rug, that's when the Attorney General came forward, when Mr. Bobby came forward with the accusations. And the gentleman who picks up the phone for WWL Radio, I asked him who his attorney was. He said, well, they don't even know if it's going to go to court.
Who Randy Smith's attorney is?
Yeah.
Well, Randy Smith hasn't. I don't think Randy Smith has said publicly who's defending him at this time. As for your statement that Randy Smith should have pressed charges against Bobby Cuvion, I don't think there's any allegations of criminal behavior. This would be a civil case. And I think you could make the argument that if indeed the sheriff felt that as a husband and father, in his words, the continued and worsening public harassment of his wife and the false statements against her were despicable and unacceptable, that he could have and should have sought relief in the civil courts and through a civil judgment. And I think you're right that had there been an adjudication of this in civil court, and had there been a determination by a judge that these two men should not be near one another, then this probably could have been avoided, no doubt about that. As to alcoholism being the sheriff's only defense, I don't think that you're correct in that. I think that based on what we have heard from people calling us and texting us, that maybe...
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and, in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
That's not his only defense. We are hearing from a lot of people sympathetic to the sheriff. And I'm not saying they're right or they're wrong, but I'm saying they're out there. And I think that a defense of sympathy, whether legally sound or not, may be able to get the sheriff out of a conviction. Rob, thanks for calling here on WWL. Your calls after this, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. 12:30 on your Tuesday afternoon, low rain chances, temperatures feeling pretty near 100 with that heat index, and highs around 90 degrees. Yeah, that's pretty much the forecast every day this week. Looks like we're in that regular summer pattern. 504-260-1870, the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. One person sends a message that says, I understand that this blogger may have been talking negatively about the sheriff's family and himself. However, that doesn't give him legal right to assault. Am I wrong thinking that? No, you're not wrong. The law is clear on that. And I don't want to be misunderstood, and that's why I've said this a few times. I am not suggesting that Sheriff Randy Smith could be found not guilty because he's not guilty. If the allegations are true, if what Bobby Cuvion says is true, if what the Attorney General's investigation found is accurate, those are a lot of ifs. I have not seen the video. I was not there. I don't know what the sheriff's side of the story is. He has not specifically addressed the alleged battery in the statement that he released. And he has the right to remain silent. We all know that. That being said, if the facts are as they've been presented, that the sheriff got drunk, that the sheriff's friend pointed out Kuvion to him, and the sheriff then attacked Kuvion from behind without any physical provocation and without any threat to the sheriff or to anyone else, the law is very clear that if that's what happened, the sheriff is guilty of battery. But we know very well that just because someone is clearly guilty of something does not mean they'll be convicted of it. That's why they're allowed to mount a legal defense. That's why they have to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I don't know. You know, we can try to read the tea leaves from the sheriff's release about what how he may defend himself if this goes to trial. But there could be additional facts that are presented between now and then that are not yet in the public record. There could be information that's come to light. I don't know, and I don't want to speculate about what defense he may mount and what he may claim. I don't know how the alcohol might factor into it, the anger. I don't know if there's some claim of temporary insanity. I don't know. But what I do know is sympathy goes a long way. And there is sympathy from many people who are responding when they hear about this story to the sheriff. And there are many people who feel, regardless of what the law says, they feel like he had justification. And they feel like some people deserve to be beat up. I hear that all the time. He had it coming. He deserved what he got. And maybe the law doesn't allow for that. I don't think there's any had it coming clause in the state statutes dealing with battery. But if a juror feels that way, regardless of the jury instructions, regardless of what they're told they should do when they go into that jury deliberation room, I have sat on a jury. It was a civil case in federal court. And when we got into the jury room, about half of the jurors, when sharing how they thought they would vote on who was liable in the case, were citing facts that were either not in evidence or we were instructed specifically not to consider. And we're not obeying the jury instructions, either because A, they didn't understand them, or B, they didn't care what they were instructed to do. And as the process was unfolding, it became very clear to me that some of the members of this jury did not care what the law said, did not want to sit as a juror as defined by law, but instead wanted to sit in judgment as they saw fit in their own moral or personal or whatever they were bringing to that table. And we had heated, intense discussions. And this was a case that involved a boat crashing into an oil rig. And all of the evidence that was presented about who was at the helm and who should have been at the helm and who was trained to be at the helm. And it just, it was, but the point I'm making is many of the jurors, several of the jurors, did not care about the jury instructions and did not care about how we were legally supposed to come to our determination of who was at fault in this case. It was more about how they felt. And a lot of people feel like Sheriff Smith was justified and Bobby Cuvion had it coming. Others feel exactly the opposite. But remember, a jury has to be unanimous. Terry, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. Hi, Terry.
Hey, I got something for her. Randy Smith, that would have been me. Hold on a second.
We're holding on a second. We need hold music, Terry.
I'm good.
All
if
right.
that would have been me, I'd have been in jail as soon as it happened, okay? Randy Smith should have resigned immediately. I don't care what he said. It took 30 minutes for the cops to get there. They didn't even test him for DUI. He had 19 drinks on his bill.
He wasn't driving. You can't test someone for their blood alcohol.
I know he wasn't driving, but his buddy was driving, and he was sitting there drinking with him. So somebody had to have too many drinks in him, okay? That's the way if that would have been me or you, if I were up to you, because I disagree, all right, if I disagree with Scoot, I see Scoot, and I beat Scoot up, I'm going to jail immediately. No questions asked. Randy Smith thinks he's above the law. He should be resigned immediately because I don't care. Nobody deserves to get beat up. Hey, look, if somebody wants to beat somebody up, Donald Trump needs to go out and beat half the country up because they all say kill him, do this to him, and that. And he's not doing nothing like that. Randy Smith should have been fired. It took 30 minutes for the police to get there. He already has left, okay? I don't care what people think deserve it. You don't deserve to get beat up. Because there was a saying, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words cannot hurt you. And I don't care anything. Randy Smith deserves to be fired immediately. He should have resigned immediately, but he's above the law. That's Randy Smith. And I live in St. Tammany Parish, and I wish they'd fire him immediately.
Do you think that will happen? Terry, I know what you feel should happen. But do you think that will happen? Do you think?
Oh no, it's the same thing. Like, hey, he's gonna have all his buddies come up. Oh, Randy Smith's a good guy. Randy Smith's this. Randy Smith's that. Nothing's gonna happen to him. He's gonna walk scot free. And in 3 or 4 years, when he runs for sheriff in St. Tammany, he'll get reelected because all his buddies are gonna vote for him.
I think he's up for reelection next year, actually. So.
Okay, then he'll get reelected. Even if he's indicted, convicted, he'll get reelected because the people over here are not going to change. And, you know, he's got to go. And I'm sorry, but nothing's going to happen to him. He's going to walk scot-free. But if that had been me or you, we'd still be sitting in jail right now.
Well, I do agree with you that if I attacked somebody in a drunken rage and beat the crap out of them, chances are they would take me to jail as soon as they found me, whether I fled the scene or not. Let's play devil's advocate. Who would have done that? The St. Tammany Sheriff's Office would not. His deputies would not do that. There's a conflict of interest there. So then you have to call on state police. And that's going to take time to then say, okay, now we have to call state police in. Do you think that they did the wrong thing in calling in the attorney general to investigate this and determine if there should be charges?
First of all, they didn't arrest him in St. Tammany Parish. They had to get him in Tangible Hoe Parish.
Hold on. He was booked into Tangible Hoe, and that's normal. When a sheriff is arrested, when the former sheriff of Orleans Parish was just arrested, she was booked in Jefferson Parish. He was booked in Tangible Hoe because they're not going to put you in your own jail.
Then I made a mistake on that one. But anyway, no, nothing's going to happen to him because if he did get arrested by his own people, he'd have some guys would be fired on the spot. So I'm sorry, but Randy Smith should resign immediately, but nothing's going to happen to him because he's above the law. He's above the law.
So you don't only think he feels like he's above the law, but you think
he is above the law. He is above the law because he thinks he's above the law. Because I'm not saying anything, but it may not be. I don't think it's his first run-in with alcohol, but. No. I'm not going to go and vow. I'm not going to say anything to that real. I can't say.
You don't have you don't have evidence of that. That's just how you feel.
I don't have evidence. But
all right, Terry. You hear the music. We got to take a break. Thank you for calling. George is up next. And your calls, too, at 504-260-1870. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in the news at 1 o'clock, President Trump says Iran shot down a U.S. Apache helicopter and that America must respond to this attack. So it looks like tensions are getting even more intense in Iran, and it looks like the U.S. will be launching attacks, and maybe, just maybe, the ceasefire is now completely over. We'll find out. Stay tuned. We'll have more coming up in the news at 1 o'clock. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Texts are coming in on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. One person says, point blank, Sheriff Smith needs to resign. Doesn't matter how much he was provoked or if alcohol plays a factor. That's even more of a reason he should resign. Somebody else says, so many people calling, stating the law is the law and must be followed, but they completely ignore the defendant's right to due process and innocent until proven guilty. Just say you don't like Randy Smith and be done with it. And somebody else texts us and says, Sheriff Smith may escape the criminal charges, but the civil damages lawsuit will crush him. George, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. How you doing, George?
Hey, Dave. I just wanted to say I have to agree with your previous caller. It's Randy Smith. He definitely thinks he's above the law. If this were you or me, we might still be in jail. This is, and I live in St. Tammany. I don't know for how much longer, but this is a very corrupt parish, if not one of the most corrupt parishes in the state. I mean, what is a bondsman? A bonds bailman doing hanging out with the sheriff. I mean, it's a good old boy system. And guess what their second to highest revenue producer in St. Tammany Parish is? Their judicial system and their jail. Do not drive down a one-way street in St. Tammany Parish. They will figure out a way to throw your butt in jail. It's all about money, and all these cats are above the law. Do as I say, not as I do. He needs to resign and be held accountable.
Do you think
That's
he
all
will?
I had to say.
Do you think he will resign?
More people. No.
You think he'll be convicted?
Do you think he'll be ego? No.
Do you think he'll run for re-election and win?
I think there's more people on my side than the previous caller. Than the people that have sympathy or what? If it were you or me, Dave, we wouldn't get that kind of treatment. Matter of fact, our mugshots, we would have been in black and white stripes.
I agree with you. No, I agree with you. We would have been arrested far more quickly. We would have had to take off our clothes and be searched and booked into jail, and we would have been in prison garb in our mugshot. But we would have had the right to bond out. As if we were a first-time offender on these charges, we would have been able to bond out.
Right. I know somebody this just happened to recently, the same situation, and they spent 6 days in jail before they could get out, and they were eligible to bond out. They just dragged their feet on it.
Well, they needed a better lawyer, that's for sure.
Not as I do. And it's a very corrupt little parish, and it's a good old boy system. Nothing's going to happen to this guy, but something would definitely happen to you or I. That's all I had to say, Dave.
Thank you, George. Thanks for listening. Appreciate the call. 504-260-1870. Opinions are very, very strong on both sides and throughout the middle of all of this situation. It really has brought up so many different emotions in so many people. And triggered so many thoughts and emotions. And I get it. There's a lot that goes into this. And it is, to me, almost surreal that we're talking about that this really happened in the way that it did. And we're not streaming a television show on Netflix or Prime Video or Apple TV or something. But this is real life. This is really unfolding before our eyes. And I think it's fascinating. And I think it's unfortunate. I think there's a lot of unfortunate all the way around with this. And I guess we will ultimately see where the law does fall and how it all works out. But I guarantee you every politician who has a part in this now, from the sheriff to the state police to the attorney general, are all very, very carefully considering everything they say and everything they do and trying to make sure that every action they take sends the message they want it to take. I'll have some final thoughts, and we'll see what Ian's working on in for Scoot coming up next on WWL. Kenny, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What's on your mind, Kenny?
I'm calling about Sheriff Randy Smith.
What you think?
I think I've been living in St. Tammany for over 30 years. I moved there because it was a good place to live, a safe place to live, and I believe it's still a safe place to live. And Randy Smith's been a policeman for over 30 years, and he's done a great job.
Okay, well, do you think he'll beat the rap? And do you think if he runs for re-election, he'll win again?
I don't know whether he'll beat the rap, but I think if he ran for re-election, he would win because the majority, he's well-known throughout all of St. Tammany, and the majority of the people like him and like the job he's done.
Yeah, a lot of people are angry at him right now, though. I mean, we're hearing both. A lot of people are very sympathetic, a lot of people who still love him, and a lot of people are very angry at his behavior.
Yeah, no, look, what he did was wrong, but he was definitely provoked by Bobby Cuvillon.
Kenny, I appreciate the call. 504-260-1870. Listen, we have to wait for a trial or at least learning more of the facts, getting to see the video for ourselves. We don't know all the facts in the case. People in this country are innocent till proven guilty. It looks really bad for Randy Smith right now. It looks horrible for Randy Smith right now. But that being said, there's enough people out there who are sympathetic to him or love him enough. And like I said, having served on a jury and seen many, many, many jury verdicts over my time covering news, the jury does not always follow the letter of the law, nor the jury instructions. And all it takes is one sympathetic ear. And I think his defense can find one sympathetic ear. And I think that he can avoid conviction. Whether he can win re-election or not, depends who runs against him. We shall see. Ian.
Hi.
Ian Hoke is in for Scoot coming up next. What you got for us?
In the 3 o'clock hour. Talk to Joe Heron-Muller from the Louisiana Advocacy Coalition on Homelessness about House Bill 211, which appears to criminalize the act of sleeping in public spaces, despite the fact that we have not enough resources to move those people out of the street, out of public spaces.
Wait to see if the governor is going to sign that bill.
Indeed. We will also be speaking to retired Lieutenant General Russell Honore. He's going to be back on the show with us today talking about hurricane preparation. Going to take kind of a different angle on this. People's hurricane plans should already be in place, but we should understand FEMA, chronically understaffed, under-resourced at this point, might not be there in the way they have in the past. We're going to start in the first hour talking to Andrew Doss, who's a former prosecutor, Yale Divinity School student. Tomorrow night, he's going to become an Episcopal priest. We'll talk about faith, law, politics, climate, and good governance.
Ian's up next for Scoot. I enjoyed the last 3 hours. I'll see y'all at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning for the early edition.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.